bitch.
Catapult of propaganda.
The truth out there.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us. The military industrial complex. This were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, everybody, and welcome to our Memorial Day bunker.
Happy Memorial Day, and a special salute to the men and women of our armed forces, those in current service, and especially to the memory of those who have fallen in the service of this nation.
That is very true. The one thing I regret about today is that we couldn't go and visit our family, because I would love to have laid some flowers on my dad's grave, because he served in the Navy during World War II.
Yeah. My dad managed to avoid service, but that was only because of a softball injury that took place just about the time guys were being mustered out of the Korean War conflict. So
your dad kind of fell in the cracks there between wars.
He was too young for World War II, but my uncle served in as a CB construction battalion in World War II. And Dad's other brother, Uncle Jack, served in as a communication specialist, electronic specialist with the military in during the Vietnam conflict. So he was in Thailand, was on an island in just north of Japan, which was very interesting because it was
Monster Island.
Yeah, it was Monster Island, and he managed to get out of there okay. So we were happy about that. But and I've got cousins that have served in the military as well. So just about every generation of my family, going all the way back to the early days, have served in the military.
Yeah, mine and well, mine goes back to actually both sides of the Revolutionary War.
Yeah.
I had cousins shooting at each other.
You did, and in the Civil War, too.
Uh-huh.
So it's been an interesting family history for you.
I know.
So,
well, you know what? We have the privilege of having Captain Eric May on as our guest today and tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's no coincidence that we brought him on for Memorial Day, because we felt that that was only fitting. He has some, I think, revelations to share with some of our listeners. Some of you may already have heard his insights on the Battle of Baghdad. Some of you may not. For those of you who have never heard Captain Eric May speak, you are truly going to enjoy this. For those of you who have, you already know what a treat it is.
Right. So we've got, we felt it was fitting to bring him on today, especially considering the reason that he named his, what he calls a cyber intelligence unit. He calls it Ghost Troop. And he'll explain why in the interview that we'll feature here in just a few minutes.
You know, it's that networking that is one of my favorite things about the PID format that we have started over the last year or so. Mm-hmm. We've really formed a little virtual family, and in some ways a virtual church, because there are many of us who really have not found a church that meets our needs. We feel like not the entire gospel just isn't being presented, and it's so frustrating, and I think that having come together this way is just a godsend.
Amen to that. And it is kind of funny, because as Stan Dale said the one time, that oftentimes you'll raise topics such as the ones we discuss here on this program at church, and after a week or two, a deacon will take you aside and say, you know, kindly suggest that you might be happier at the church up the road. So, but it's true, and it's not just in church. It's our neighbors, it's our friends, it's family members who we're trying to awaken to the reality of what's happening around us. And reality is not what we see on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Captain May made a very interesting statement. He said at one point in his life, he worked in a furniture store selling furniture for a guy known in Texas as Mattress Mac, who spent more money on TV advertising than anyone else in the state of Texas. Because, as Mattress Mac said, if it ain't on TV, it ain't real. And
that's a sad statement, but very true.
It's very astute if you're trying to advertise
and
something.
And conversely, if it is on a TV, it is real.
Exactly his point. And, well, we'll just say this. Watch the movie Wag the Dog. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So let's dive into some stories in the news. There's some interesting things that have been happening. Even though holiday weekends are typically slow news weekends, we talked a bit last week about the raid on the office of Congressman William Jefferson, and then the subsequent panic that took place at the Rayburn office building, and the office-by-office sweep conducted by the FBI and Capitol Police.
It's starting to make sense.
Yes.
Both you and I had the feeling that there was way more to this than we were being told.
Right.
And now we're starting to get some evidence.
Mm-hmm. It's not a secret that the investigation around William Jefferson is connected to goings-on in Nigeria. Nigeria is a country, as many in Africa are, that is blessed with a lot of natural wealth. Sadly, like many underdeveloped nations with a lot of natural wealth, they don't have the means or the will to withstand the overtures of the wealthy industrialized West.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we come in waving lots of money at a few key politicians in a place like Nigeria, and they will sign over rights to their oil or diamonds or gold or uranium or whatever they happen to have to somebody, a company such as Halliburton. Now, I'm not saying specifically that this is what's going on. Please don't misunderstand. I'm just using it as an example. That sort of scenario is what's being investigated here with Congressman Jefferson. He was found with $90,000. Apparently, he spent 10 of the 100,000 that he was given in order to grease the skids for some business venture in Nigeria. Wayne Madsen, at his website, waynemadsenreport.com, has reported now that his sources indicate that the bribes are connected to past dealings between the government of Nigeria or people in the government of Nigeria and certain oil companies from the United States. The conclusion then, or speculation, is that this raid was conducted to get rid of evidence that would tie the bribery scandal in Nigeria to certain oil companies or oil services companies in the United States, like perhaps the one formerly headed by the vice president, Halliburton.
Sanitation project.
That is correct. And that perhaps this 45-day cooling off window, while it's being portrayed in the media as an opportunity for the Congress, the legislative branch, and the president, the executive branch, to work out the constitutional issues, that perhaps what is happening here is a 45-day period for the evidence to be examined and sanitized to protect Vice President Cheney, or perhaps people with whom he was,
or somebody else. It's hard
connected
to say who all
or
might be
else
involved in this.
That is correct. In fact, it is known that Halliburton has been investigated in the past by the Securities and Exchange Commission and the Justice Department for shady dealings in Nigeria.
Well, the nice thing is, from now on, they won't have to report anything they do, as long as Negroponte says, you know what, this is one of the companies I want you to leave alone.
National security issues, you don't have to report anything.
That's right.
So what's really interesting, though, is that Madsen, in his report, really tears into the Daily Kos.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that we have believed for a long time, and I'm just going to sidetrack here for a minute and rant just on my own.
Okay.
That the primary political bloggers in the game today, Daily Kos, Democratic Underground,
Instapundit,
and many of the right-wing bloggers, Michelle Malkin, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, are gatekeepers.
Mm-hmm.
They are gatekeepers filtering information and perpetuating this left-right Democrat-Republican myth that they want Americans to believe. Daily Kos used Madsen as a source for his article over the weekend on the Jefferson scandal. But, of course, they spin it as being, you know, Jefferson's being targeted because they want to divert attention away from Cheney. Okay, that's the Daily Kos spin.
Mm-hmm.
But in quoting Madsen and using him as a source, they trash him and say, you know, Madsen, for you conspiracy theorists out there, you know, we'll just show you we're being totally fair by using this tinfoil hat wacko as a source, is essentially the way they put it. And Madsen basically got angry and has posted a story about Kos in his report. It's the top story as of the time we record this on Memorial Day Monday. cause, apparently, was one of the prime movers and shakers in the Howard Dean campaign and set up the whole internet money soliciting thing to raise money for Dean's grassroots campaign. Mm-hmm. They turned up about $50 million. Well, a lot of that money is now unaccounted for. Nobody seems to know where it is.
Hmm.
Makes one wonder. Enough of the rant.
Well, I have a rant.
All right.
I do. There is a story that's coming out about Haditha in Iraq.
Yeah.
And
know that name is going to become a much bigger part of American cultural lexicon in the days and weeks ahead.
It's going to be right up there with Milai.
Yes.
This is a town where apparently American soldiers shot innocent civilians without cause.
Mm-hmm.
This story has been out there for a while.
Yes, we reported it. Well,
March.
You plugged it in and Watcher Magazine.
And it actually occurred last fall.
Mm-hmm.
This story, as I said, has been around for a while. We picked up on it in March. It's being played in the media now as if it's, whoa, where'd this come from? We didn't know this was happening.
Mm-hmm.
When, in fact, the military, Rumsfeld, has been investigating this for several months. Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, the reason I bring this up is not only is this a terrible thing to have happened, which apparently it really did because there is a videotape of it, which I think is why the military is forced to investigate it.
Mm-hmm.
But it harkens back to something that happened, not just My Lai in Vietnam, but it goes even back further to the Korean War, to an incident at Nogunri.
Mm-hmm.
This is a time when the military men, probably mostly men, I would say men and women, but I'm betting that most of the women who were there serving at the time were in the nurse corps.
Right.
But we'll say men and women who were there were told to fire upon any refugees running their way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is just coming out. It's been apparently in the news for a few years, but it's really hitting the media now. You may start hearing this as well in connection with the Haditha story. This apparently is coming out now because an ambassador's letter from 1950 has surfaced. And in this letter, Ambassador John Mutchell tells the Dean Rusk, if refugees do appear from north of U.S. lines, they will receive warning shots.
Mm-hmm.
And if they then persist in advancing, they will be shot. These are refugees. These are innocent civilians. Now, I understand that it can be really tough. Mm-hmm. I've not been in battle. But here's my rant. It's not how dare they shoot. It is how dare they be asked to shoot.
Yeah.
How dare our company, our government, our company, it is a company.
Mm-hmm.
How dare our government, our military leaders, ask men and women to shoot civilians?
And men and women who are more than likely not yet out of their 20s, and some mm-hmm. of them may still be in their,
children.
In their late teens. Yeah.
Oh, you're talking about the soldiers, yes.
Our soldiers who have been placed in a situation where before they are even old enough to run for most political offices in the United States, being asked to make life and death decisions on people who are coming toward them, and apparently civilians.
And now, they're being trained with seared brains. They're intentionally searing their minds so that men and women who go into the military look upon other men and women, their quote-unquote enemies, as nothing more than a meat sack.
Mm-hmm.
I can take them down because they're really not human. Now, they probably are not consciously thinking this. I can't imagine that any man or woman going into the military is consciously thinking this. But unconsciously, through video games, mm-hmm. through the way that they're being trained, it is a very objective, sterile environment where all you do is just, it's just the finger on the button, go, 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 go.
Mm-hmm.
And so I suspect that in Haditha, that the reaction was one almost of an autonomic one. You know, something happened and, mm-hmm. and it instantly triggered the trigger.
And they are under situations in Haditha, just as many of our soldiers were in the Vietnam War, where you can't tell the difference between a refugee and a non-combatant
mm-hmm.
and somebody who's carrying an IED ready to blow you up and on all your buddies, too. and that under such stressful conditions to which you and I can't possibly relate.
No, we can't. We really can't.
That it is perhaps easier to make that decision to pull the trigger than we can possibly imagine.
And I guess for that reason, I guess my rant really, if I've not made the point, my rant is don't instantly blame the men and women who are involved in the shootings.
Right.
Take a look at the way they were trained, what they're being asked to do, and the environment they're in.
Exactly. And while we can't speak to the way soldiers were trained 50 years ago going into the Korean conflict, we can look at things that are out there today that are being marketed, not being marketed to the public and not just to the military. We talked the other day about the video game developed by the company that produces the training sim for the military to make a game out of going into Venezuela and taking out a dictator.
We're not going to name him. Oh, we don't mean Chavez.
And the actual sim, the military sim used to train American soldiers, is available as a game that can be purchased. You can take a look at it on the internet, you know, fullspectrumwarrior.com, and you can take a look at what is being used as a training device. And some of these first-person shooter games, not just military games, but first-person shooter games in general, I'm not a psychiatrist, but I can't help but think that that has a desensitizing effect on pulling a trigger, you know, sighting down a scope at a human target and pulling a trigger.
We're not bad-mouthing video games. Both Derek and I play video games.
Right.
I like them. I have a rule. I don't play any video game where I'm targeting a human.
First-person shooters don't interest me in the least. In fact, they creep me out.
No, exactly. I'll go after monsters. I like monsters.
Going after monsters is okay.
Actually, I like Zelda. That's my favorite game. Okay, so now I've said it. I've revealed that I'm a Zelda.
I'm not much into those. I prefer strategy games more than anything else. But I just don't have enough time to play those anyway.
That's what Zelda is. It's all strategy.
Well, that's true. That's true. And the battles are against really fantastic monsters.
Yeah, I will.
It's not like shooting down a sighting down a gun barrel.
Exactly. It's third person. You're actually seeing the entire event. So you're very. Anyway, rant.
The Haditha story is one that is going to get grow. It's going to get bigger.
And you have to ask yourself, why is it coming out now? It's been around a while. Why is it suddenly? I was watching Fox News and even MSNBC. They're looking at each other like, whoa, where'd this story come from?
Yeah. Somebody is playing it for political advantage. And the question still need to be answered is who's doing it and what do they hope to gain by publicizing the story? So we'll keep an eye on that, and again, just question, why are our young men and women being placed in situations where they need to make life and death decisions on civilians? Horrible story coming from the UK, and just another indication of the postmodern world in which we live. Babies are being aborted over there for being imperfect.
That's really the only way to put it. We're talking about babies with webbed fingers, a baby with a sixth finger. These are things that can be fixed surgically.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, these are essentially just cosmetic defects.
Yes. Yeah.
These are not things. I mean, we're not even talking about baby being born with spina bifida or
fixed anymore. That also has a repair. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, the life of that child is totally different than it would be had the child not been born with spina bifida.
Right.
But I taught some kids who had spina bifida, and they were great kids.
The point, though, is that according to the Daily Mail, is that parents in the UK are making the decision to abort unborn children who aren't perfect. You know? It's just tissue.
The next thing is going to be, we wanted a blonde.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got the DNA code for the unborn child, and we've seen that the eyes are not going to be blue. The eyes are hazel. We wanted a blue-eyed child, let's just take it out.
Oh, he's going to be short.
Yeah, he wouldn't be happy.
Gosh, I coach basketball.
Yeah, what kind of quality of life would he have as a short
person? I mean, I'm a basketball coach. He's going to grow up feeling insecure.
DNA code says he's going to tend toward obesity. That's no good.
Oh, no, this guy's going to be an alcoholic.
Yeah, and that is the direction we're going. And because there is no objective standard for most people anymore, objective standard meaning, you know, God knew us in the womb. We are wonderfully and fearfully made, according to David and then if you don't have that understanding, that particular worldview, that children are a gift from God, regardless. I mean, even though we may not see that particular child as a gift at that moment, I'm not ready, I can't afford it, it's not perfect, whatever, there is something there that God knows that we need at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, the fact
if you
is,
don't view life that way, if you view the child in terms of your own expectations and that that mankind is the pinnacle of creation,
mm-hmm.
then you can set
your standards,
your morality to fit your circumstances. Mm-hmm. And if this child isn't what I need at this particular moment, then, well, we can just do away with it and have another one later.
My parents, 6 daughters.
Mm-hmm.
I was daughter number 5. They really were banking on a boy. Seriously, because they had just lost a boy.
Oh, yeah.
So they were really banking on my being a boy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what if they had decided, I'm sorry, but we just don't want another girl?
Yeah.
We're just going to, chuck this one and try again.
Mm-hmm. Well, this fits into the pattern of stories that we've been seeing coming from all over, really, but in particular Europe, where doctors have been terminating pregnancies for various reasons. In fact, in the Netherlands, there was a story that came out last year that doctors were euthanizing children
mm-hmm. yeah.
that were ill, which is against the law. But, making the decision that the quality of life mm-hmm. would not be acceptable mm-hmm. for a child with a particular genetic disease or what have you.
And Brave New World
making
is
the decision.
Here, folks.
Yeah. Speaking of tragedies, the story from Indonesia grows more and more grim with each hour, practically. As
yeah.
of now, we're seeing a death toll near 5,000.
Well, actually, I think it's more than 5,000 now. Last I heard, it was closer to 5,200 or even more. I posted this story actually last night and just hit publish this morning. So it's on today's date. But, it's more and more. And also Mount Merapi is starting to growl again. Apparently this earthquake may have been something that's really just in some way connected to Mount Merapi. This whole area is so active right now.
Yeah.
Plus we've got a huge fire in northern China.
Yeah, over 20,000 firemen are working on that particular.
That story is not in the news at all.
No. No, it's, again, it's not over here.
Oh, exactly. Hey, these aren't Americans. Why should we care?
And one other item to keep note of is the fact that there is a multinational coalition that's taking part in war games near the border with Iran currently. It's a military exercise in Turkey, which is allegedly designed to practice intercepting weapons before they reach Iran.
This is part of the Proliferation Security Initiative. Mm-hmm. I had never heard of it. Of course, the initials spell PSI.
Yeah. as in PSI Ops?
And that's actually PSY, I think. But,
oh, that's true. I know.
But PSI as in the Greek letter PSI, which is actually IU. But anyway, I digress. We've got a link to this Proliferation Security Initiative. It's a very interesting program that allows, it's sort of a loose network of countries saying, yes, we'll search ships and trains and boats and planes and make sure that no drugs are being, or, weapons of mass destruction or things like that. It's essentially a license for piracy.
Well,
that's how I read it. Any country can say, okay, I'm going to get it, pull over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, let us search your vehicle. Doesn't it strike you, though, as being a lot like the practice that the United States had during the 90s, late 80s and early 90s, of flying its flag on Kuwaiti vessels going through the Straits of Hormuz?
The false flag, yes.
And in basically as an antagonistic gesture toward Iran?
Mm-hmm. You mean as far as the military drill that's going on right now?
Or exactly, just yeah. Something designed
I think this was an excuse to say, because let's face it, why do you need to drill this?
Mm-hmm.
If the whole point is that you don't have an official operation, you have a loose network of countries that use their own resources
right.
to do this. This is bogus.
Yeah, it strikes me as you know, like that Simpsons episode where Bart and Lisa are having a fight. I'm just going to swing my arms in the air, and if you just happen to walk in front of my fist, that's not my
fault.
Well,
I'm going to start kicking like this, just kicking air. if you happen to get into that airspace.
Yeah, it almost looks as though it's designed to put a tripwire right out in front of Iran where somebody, you know, in the hope yeah. that somebody from Iran is going to trip over that wire and trigger the
oh, yeah, that's know. Definitely what we were doing in 88 and 89, we were trying to goad Iran into a war.
Uh-huh. It didn't work.
No, so, rats.
Yeah.
I guess we'll have to try again, they say.
Right. Now, Project for the New American Century is still trying to come up with a means to make that happen. And interestingly enough, and we'll have to talk about this more because we're running out of time, but in future days here, that it appears that members of the Project for the New American Century are making overtures toward the Democratic Party. And looking at it, it appears as though some of these chameleons are ready to change their colors again. And as we've mentioned before, many of the current neocon cabal were Democrats in the 70s.
Yeah.
And they shifted to the Republican Party when it became clear that the Republican Party was more appealing to the bulk of the American public than mm-hmm. the Democratic Party. Which
the Republicans are losing their base.
Yes. The Republicans are basically blowing off their base, which is what the Democrats did in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
They marginalized themselves by picking up a lot of fringe causes. Let's face it, 2 out of 3 Americans will identify themselves as conservatives, cultural conservatives. Whether you agree with the Republican Party or not, that describes them more than it does the Democratic Party. Now that the Republicans, the true conservatives, are being blown off by the Republican Party, Democrats, it appears, may pick up some of these guys connected to PNAC and the neocons mm-hmm. who are really calling the shots and are doing so by manipulating both parties to their
yeah.
advantage.
I want to say one last thing before we go to our wonderful guest, and that is today President Bush signed H.R. 5037 into law. This is the Respect for Military Funerals Amendment. Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
Demonstrations at 124 Virginia cemeteries and at Arlington National Cemetery will now be more restricted, and families of fallen American soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines will soon have greater protections under the federal law, thanks to legislation improved by an amendment crafted by Senator Larry Craig and recently adopted by the Senate. What this law will do is essentially... And this is, I can't really see that there's anything hidden in there. So if you know of something that I didn't find, let me know. But it appears to be a straightforward law that if you are burying your loved one, I can't come and protest the war
mm-hmm.
at your loved one's graveside. And I say, yes, I think that people should be allowed to protest the war if they want to, but not at the funeral of a fallen soldier, sailor, mm-hmm. Marine.
Well, they might as well have called this H.R. 5037 the Fred Phelps bill, because basically it seems to me that this is aimed at protests like those set up by Phelps and his group.
Yes.
Which have been going out and protesting homosexuality mm-hmm. at the funerals of soldiers that weren't homosexual.
Exactly. I agree. I think that's probably
yes.
what triggered it. But I'm really glad, and I think today is an appropriate day for President Bush to sign that.
Yes, so we'll give him credit where credit is due. And again, we just ask for dignity and respect for the fallen and some consideration for the loved ones of those who have served.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we've blathered enough. Derek did a fabulous interview with Captain Eric May. I was keeping the dogs quiet during the interview. So it's just Derek and one-on-one, and I think he did a fabulous job. So we're going to go right to part one of that interview with Captain Eric May of Ghost Troop.
We're pleased to welcome to our guest line Captain Eric May, the head of a cyber intelligence unit he calls Ghost Troop. Captain May, welcome to PID Radio.
Well, GT, Derek, it's great to be here. Do your listeners know why I call you GT?
I don't think so.
Well, I'd like to tell them, if they haven't heard from you, that to tell a story on you, that you've been linked up with Ghost Troop, which is an informal network of about 300 researchers, veterans, former intelligence folks like me, who exchange information. And by virtue of having been linked up with us, in fact, being in one of our Yahoo groups, keeping in communication with us, passing information around, you have become Ghost Troop, or GT, Derek.
Well, I am honored to be so affiliated and happy to be part of the information exchange. Information really is what it's all about, knowing where we stand in relation to what's happening in the world around us. There are so many of our brothers and sisters out there who don't have a clear picture of what's going on, and we appreciate the work that you're doing to try to raise the alarm and educate people.
Something you pick up without doubt from riding with Ghost Troop. We say riding. If you're in our internet network and you get involved in our operations, we call it riding with Ghost Troop. One of the things you find out without doubt is that Ghost Troop is involved in what's called InfoWar. And we take the idea that there's an information vacuum, which is what you just described, and from there we go into the military connotations. Mm-hmm. InfoWar is informational control, where information and intelligence become merged into each other. You know, oppressive government calls anything that's worth knowing classified and sets up a repressive apparatus to protect it, you know, and you start living in an Orwellian construct. That's the milieu within which Ghost Troop exists. We're cyber intelligence, as G.T. Derrick said, and that's where we're at, because that's where the InfoWar is. The ability to break through the controlled media, the state media apparatus, we simply have what any totalitarian or fascist state intent on going to war has, a controlled media. And the internet and what we do with people like Derek and units like Ghost Troop is that we form an alliance, a network, for breaking through that wall of disinformation it's really the great wall of lies.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got a couple of days here over which we're going to split the two parts of the interview that we're in the process of right now, Captain. And what I'd like to do, since this first part is going to air appropriately, I think, on Memorial Day, is discuss why you decided to name the unit Ghost Troop.
Yeah, this is a great time for that. I thank you for bringing it up. And by the way, since it is coming up on Memorial Day, I have to say I've never been interviewed by a Ghost Troop on a Ghost Troop-affiliated radio. Always other people. I have to say happy Memorial Day and a very thoughtful remembrance to all the comrades of our combat veteran Ghost Troops, of whom there are several.
Well, let me echo that. I did not have I was not required to serve, did not have the privilege to serve, but we do, as Sharon and I have pointed out many times, respect greatly the time, the effort, the blood, and the sweat, and the tears of people like yourself who have served in the military. Family members of ours have served in almost every conflict since before this country was a country, in fact. So we do appreciate the sacrifice of those who've fallen, especially.
Go ahead. Well, one thing, and we'll go ahead and go to the Battle of Baghdad cover-up, which was my immediate entry into the InfoWar.
Right.
But before I do, I want to say we actually have two Ghost Troops who have fallen in the cause of our country. Both of them were octogenarians, but both of them were very healthy octogenarians when they began operations with Ghost Troop. One of them, ironically enough, was a black man who had been a non-com in the Pacific Theater with the Army, and the other of them was a German who had been a Panzer officer on the Eastern Front and
Wow.
had afterwards gotten captured by the Americans and become an American citizen. Both of them worked with Ghost Troop in the early days to the point that it exhausted their energy and their health, and
Wow.
both died. So both, and their names are Mr. Joseph Coleman and Dr. Peter Gunther.
Hmm.
It's hard for me to mention them. You know, as people have info, war stories from all wars, we have info war stories, and we've lost people along the way. So we remember them, and we ask that everybody remember what... Ultimately, Memorial Day is remembering what war is about.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, so getting to that, and by the way, you know, lest anybody think that we're peaceniks or anything of the sort, we're very strenuously against making a position on that. We simply talk about the things that are wrong with the way things are. We don't really get into how things ought to be in the ideal sense. There are many of us who have been in the military. We're not tofu eaters, as people would say. I was writing a bit of military analysis for the Houston Chronicle, publishing it in the form of op-ed, before the war started, that being the March 19th, 2003 beginning of the Iraqi war. And since that was the case, I was publishing analysis of the war that was going on, and I was taking a quite eager interest in it, with my background in military intelligence in the Army. I noticed on the night of April 4th, that being the night that we got to Baghdad and began to surround Baghdad for a long siege that we've been talking about on the air for the whole time, What happened was that there was some kind of a firefight started at the Baghdad airport. And a lot of Americans caught that on Friday night, April 4th, over here. It would have been Saturday morning, April 5th, over there. What it turned out to be was that there was a big clash there that the American elements, the 37th Cav and elements of the 3rd Infantry Division and perhaps the Marines, got counterattacked when they set up shop on the Baghdad airport and looked like they were getting the worst of it. That all by the next morning had been censored out of all the media. Let's say this. They had stopped giving the information on it, and the next morning we woke up and everyone was talking about Jessica Lynch. So Jessica Lynch was the cover story to keep people from looking at the fact that Baghdad didn't just fall, as they say. You know, if you listen to the mainstream media today, you'll hear, after the fall of Baghdad, or when Baghdad fell, man, they always say in the passive voice, people don't want people to know, we lost a lot of guys taking Baghdad. There was a big fight, and it wasn't a pretty fight, and it wasn't all good for the American side, so it got blocked out. I kept my mouth shut for a pretty good while. I thought it was pretty rotten that they deprived the boys who died in the battle of their just desserts. I made a little bit of a protest at my local college. I was a member of the Honors College, so I went there and asked for a little charity for the boys. Very little was given. Nobody believed me when I said there'd been a battle. And
right. If Fox News doesn't report it, it can't be so.
Well, yeah. You see, I worked for a guy who sold the most furniture in Texas at one time, a guy named Mattress Mac, and he had a saying, if it doesn't happen on TV, it doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
He paid more money for advertisements than anybody in Texas and sold more furniture. You know, it was very simple to him.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the people who control what is broadcast are the people who control what is. So when I tell you that I went for 40 hours over the next 2 weeks after the Battle of Baghdad and asked for charity for the widows and orphans of the men who had died taking Baghdad, that's all I said. That's all I asked. I mean, I didn't say there had been hundreds or near 1,000 or there had been a big battle. I just said people had died. In 40 hours of collections at my alma mater of privileged kids, I picked up $20.
Huh.
That's 50 cents per hour from a country that is saying, you know, gung-ho, let's go. Let's go fight a war. This big jingoistic patriotic movement is going on the one hand, and on the other hand, these people who are, you know, just dying to go take over the Middle East, these kids, these Republican kids, are just, they're oblivious to the idea that the poor widows and orphans of the boys they're sending into combat might need a buck.
Mm.
It was terribly ironic, and it moved me deeply because I realized it was all done by virtue of the fact that the media had shut down the pictures. And had kept it shut down specifically to keep us into the war. The way they monkeyed around with all the information to get us into the war, they have monkeyed around with all the information since we got there to keep us into the war. And I found that out at Baghdad. I went out to Fort Stewart, Georgia, where the 3rd Infantry Division's home base was, and on May 14th, 2003, met up with the Special Forces Colonel Neil Dennington, who was a chaplain at one of their chapels. But basically what he told me, and many people who've dealt with chaplains in wartime can tell you this, what he told me is I better keep my mouth shut and stay out of it. Heck yeah, they were throwing away the Constitution, but they killed people who got in the way.
Mm.
So, you know, welcome to God, y'all. This is what I was getting from the chaplains out at Fort Stewart. So after that, I came home for a couple of months, kept my head down. You know, it affects you a little bit when you talk with serious people and they say, get out or you're going to get killed. So I kept my head down, but then around July 4th, Independence Day of 2003, that's when the Joe Wilson thing happened, when Joe Wilson's piece came out in the New York Times saying Bush had lied about the uranium evidence.
Right.
I ran my last op-ed with the Houston Chronicle, and it was a broadside against Bush. So Wilson published his up there in New York on July 6th, hitting Bush, you know, on the weapons of mass destruction lies. I ran a piece July 8th down in Houston busting him on a lousy war plan, which is what everybody's agreeing now is the case, right?
Right.
But 3 years ago, everybody wasn't agreeing it. Everybody was shutting their mouth and not saying it, so I screamed it all over the page of the Houston Chronicle. Well, within a week, I was underground. There are some suspicious, quote-unquote, suicides going on worldwide. And that's when I really decided I was in the info war. But what had happened to really send me over the edge was that in around July 4th, reports had come out that the widows and orphans of the men whom I knew had been killed in Baghdad, the nation didn't, but I did, reports were coming out that they were basically getting, you know, shoved around and given psychotropic drugs by the army authorities up there to keep them in line, you know, keep them under control. They were doing everything but cattle prodding these military families, is what I'm saying, man.
Well, Captain, now, what is the difference between the number of people who are admittedly, who were admitted to have died in the battle by the U.S. government, and what you think the actual number was?
Well, I think that's... Anyone who wants to know us and our work should just go to Google and pick up Ghost Troop Captain May. Just pick that up, and you'll get our main site that has all these things we're going to talk about. But I published that in the original report called the Ghost Troop Introduction, which is online and quite well read. The original Army death counts, get this, the CENTCOM death counts for the war going into the Battle of Baghdad. Now, this is, you got to think of the death count when we're coming up the Euphrates River, we're getting hit, right, left, right, underneath a little bit, and get up to the border of Baghdad, and we're taking a body count, you know, of about 10 people, 6 people a day, every day going up into the war, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So we get to Baghdad, and then you get to April 5th and April 6th, the 2 days when I know the fighting was the heaviest. On those 2 days, according to official CENTCOM reports published at the time and kept up for about a year before they finally got rid of them, the death count went down from 10 a day to 2 a day. So let's get this straight. The night that they tell us that suddenly Jessica Lynch became the only story worth us seeing, look, you watch sports, I watch sports, right?
Yep.
When someone flips to a Pepsi commercial when it's the last play of the game, the sports fans know something's wrong, right?
Yeah, okay.
Okay, right. Well, the Battle of Baghdad was the end of the game, and everybody watching the war knew that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Jessica Lynch pops up, and they tell us that all of a sudden Jessica Lynch is the only story. Then the next we hear about Baghdad is when it's over, April 9th, because they pop over Saddam's statue, which was a set-up shot, and say, Baghdad fell. They don't tell you what happened between. Those days between, the CENTCOM public affairs folks were saying we were taking only 2 KIAs a day. In other words, they were saying that in the exact period that the battle occurred, the death count went down by 500%. And there's only one thing to me, an intelligence officer, that accounts for that. Cover-up.
Mm-hmm.
Those are BS statistics. You don't have death counts go down when major urban assaults go on.
That doesn't seem logical. I'm not military, but that doesn't seem logical.
Well, there have since been a couple of confirmations. There have been many confirmations. I've got a pretty good report on what actually happened in the battle, which I picked up from Marines and Army who were there, as well as some folks who were on the other side, or at least people who were journalists talking to folks on the other side. The Battle of Baghdad itself was confirmed on December 7th. Now, get this. The battle by which Bush took Baghdad so he could have his little cheerleader moment out there on May Day, USS Abraham Lincoln in the flight suit.
Right.
Right? He covers up the guys who got killed because he wants to have his great Hollywood moment and not have it messed up by the blood and guts.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, well, anyway, it doesn't get reported by the U.S. media until December 7th. Now, get this. It happened on April 5th, 6th, 7th, and maybe the 8th. It doesn't get reported until December 7th. The biggest story of the war gets reported 8 months after it happened. And then the people who run it at the L.A. Times, you know how you say you work with cult stuff and numerics?
Right.
Think about the wickedness of it, man. You cover up these Christian boys who died in that Battle of Baghdad, and then you don't write a story about it until what day? December 7th.
December 7th.
In other words, a Pearl Harbor story.
Right.
And then the same guy who wrote the story, a guy named David Zucchino, writes for the L.A. Times. So what the military will say is, oh, yeah, they reported that story. And everybody forgets to report on the fact that that story has never been retold, and that story wasn't told at all until after, 2/3 of a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was told in very abridged form. The same guy published a book about it on April Fool's Day, 2004. Mm-hmm. So how much crappier can you get than to write a book about a covered-up military, you know, an article about a covered-up military battle on December 7th?
Mm.
Well, write a book about it on April Fool's Day.
Mm.
In other words, man, this is the kind of sadistic twist of the knife. If you dealt with the Bush people, and you dealt with them as an entity, you have to realize sadism and cruelty are very deep into their fabric. And the idea of doing stuff to desecrate the memory of the very people they've covered up in Baghdad is consistent.
Do you have an estimate of how many people actually died during the Battle of Baghdad?
I always thought that it would have been around 500, 300 to 500 was what I was saying
mm-hmm.
The whole time. And I hope that I'm wrong. I hope that it's lower. I've heard estimates now that are unofficial. There was some confirmed. There was some Soviet intelligence that was coming out. Not Soviet. Russian, excuse me. I'm an old soldier. Pretty soon I'll be talking Russian, which I can do too, from my Cold War days. But it's Russian intelligence was saying that there were dozens of confirmed deaths on the first day, April 5th. But then the Russians got run out of town and actually got fired up by U.S. forces at the Syrian border.
I remember that story, yeah.
Right. Well, that was all related to the fact that the Russians were doing something very subversive. They were reporting back true information, and they were probably cracking U.S. communications. I mean, that's what people at embassies are reputed to be able to do.
That's what they're supposed to do, yeah.
Right. So there was intel going on. The same thing as the Battle of Baghdad. That's when Al Jazeera just kind of got, whoops, flipped, friendly fired.
Mm-hmm.
Remember?
Yep.
Al Jazeera journalist got blown up by U.S. tank rounds.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, come on. You don't think that was Karl Rove? In other words, people don't understand that this war, the errors and the sadisms of this war emanate from the commander-in-chief.
Well, so we've got the ghost troop then named in honor of the 300 to 500 who fell.
No, not, yeah, let's go ahead. That's the people who fought the Battle of Baghdad who never got reported.
Mm-hmm.
We at that point, I thought once I got into this full-fledged both feet into it, I declared a mission of conscience, reactivated my former rank of captain, and came on this, you know, pro patria, pro bono, for country, for the good of things. No money in it, you know, don't make any, don't accept any.
Okay.
And we decided that we would name the unit Ghost Troop because there were actually, there were Alpha Bravo, Charlie Delta, Echo, and Foxtrot troops already from the 37th Cavalry Regiment, the unit that we think took the brunt of the battle at the Baghdad airport.
Mm-hmm.
So the obvious thing when you have A through F troops was to go ahead and throw on G troops. So we're the 7th Troop of the 37th. We're the unofficial 7th Troop, the Ghost Troop. And because we always figured that about enough guys to fill a company or a squadron, a troop, like us, meaning 100, 200 guys,
mm-hmm.
was probably about what died out of the 37th Cavalry.
Okay.
So I've got a troop of, that was the start. Now, since then, you know, you've probably heard the same reports I have, which is that there's an ongoing continuation of the misrepresentation of the true death count, that only a fragment of the real dead are getting reported.
Mm-hmm.
So Ghost Troop not only entails the original Baghdad people, but also the uncounted dead since who are misrepresented in official reports and, of course, never shown in the media.
Is it your understanding that anyone who is severely wounded in action and then shipped out of country to, say, Germany or medical hospital, military hospital somewhere else, who then dies later of their wounds is not counted as a killed in action?
Right. I've gotten that multi-source. I've gotten that media and military side. Now,
okay.
They could be repeating each other's chatter, but that's been a consistent and ongoing story.
Okay.
And all I know is the only one I can really tell you accurately about is the Baghdad thing.
Okay.
Where I've had officers who were on the periphery of that telling me that they were, let's say, down in Qatar running strategic air stuff or, you know, air resupply, and that all of a sudden flights that looked like they were specifically intended for evacuation of a large number of corpses were established. So, you know, I've gotten stuff that grim on the Baghdad thing. The ongoing thing with the misrepresentation of body count, I'm convinced there's a scam. Lord knows there's nothing this administration tells us that I don't think is a lie.
Mm-hmm.
It's really pretty easy to know they're lying. They're talking.
The lips are moving, yeah.
So I think the misidentification is ongoing, although I can't particularize it. So Ghost Troop involves not only Baghdad, but also the uncounted other ones. Mm-hmm. And if you wanted to say it more expansively, you could say everybody who got shot up in this war that turns out to have been about oil and Israel from the start, and none of the lofty rhetoric that we convince the public of with the you know, propaganda media.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose ultimately there are a few specific martyrs who are part of Ghost Troop. I can tell you the earliest one is Rachel Corley. We adopted her retroactively after I met her father, former staff sergeant, first cab brother of mine, Craig Corey. I met him in Houston in September, just a few months after. If you know Rachel Corey, she's the gal who was standing up to the Israeli bulldozers in a Palestinian village. They were getting
right,
ready to
right. Mm-hmm.
And they ran over, man. It was an assassination. I mean, it was a deliberate hit. And it was 3 days before the war started. Don't you know they wanted to get rid of all these pain-in-the-ass Western protesters? because as soon as the war started, they were going to go in and grind the Palestinians' teeth into the dirt.
Mm-hmm.
So they popped Rachel Corrie just like an operation, man. Now, her daddy didn't know it at the time, I don't think, but he does now.
Mm-hmm.
And so we adopted her retroactively into Go Through, because I don't figure you can be a braver person. Her daddy said it. Her dad was a Vietnam vet, Craig Corrie, like I say, Staff Sergeant Craig Corrie, first cap. And he said when he got to Vietnam, there were a few people who didn't carry like an M16, you know, officers who just had a sidearm.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, but after the first time some real stuff happened, man, everybody was carrying everything everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and nobody was without weapons all the time. Mm-hmm. And he talked about how his daughter had gone over there, and the only weapon she had was an orange vest, and her flak jacket was an orange vest, and her weapon was a bullhorn. And she went into situations time and again where finally what she was standing there to have happen, happened. But it's people like that who are really, I think, going to be the redeeming face of America after this is all over. Let me give you one more ghost group specifically to remember. These are the InfoWar martyrs. These are people who laid it down. Lisa Peterson, Spec 4, she was in the Army Intelligence Services as an interrogator, former Mormon missionary, who just happens to have died from an accidental discharge of a weapon to her head about the same day that they start Gitmoizing the Abu Ghraib prison and the other detention centers where she happened to have been an interrogator.
Mm-hmm.
It's our impression that she was probably assassinated for refusing to go away with new policies or torture that were being implemented, so she's a martyr. Colonel Ted West Using, we call him Colonel West Point, was a West Point ethics professor. A good Catholic man, had a family, you know, career officer. He volunteered to leave West Point College, the West Point Military Academy, to go do a tour in Iraq, was assigned to supervise one of the big Bush cartel defense industries, USIS, and decided they were pilfering, and they decided to have a meeting, and according to the media reports, the poor man who was a lifelong good Catholic and couldn't wait to get home to his wife just suddenly shot himself with a gun that had the fingerprints of the head of USIS security on him.
How interesting.
Mm-hmm.
How
so
interesting.
There's another. He's our senior officer at this point. I've already told you about Dr. Gunther from German Army and Mr. Coleman from the American World War II. So, you know, we've had a lot of... you could say that Ghost Troop is a Memorial Day unit. It's a memorial unit.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why we wanted to talk with you this weekend and make sure that we got the interview up on Memorial Day. We just felt it was fitting. We've been remiss in not speaking with you sooner, and definitely wanted to get your take on some things that are coming up. Now, what is the method of operation for Ghost Troop? What methods do you employ to try to figure out what is coming up?
Well, when we talk about Ghost Troop as an operational entity,
mm-hmm.
I founded Ghost Troop, and its foundational structure is that of a cavalry troop. We try to make what we do replicate the whole concept of cavalry. And the concept of cavalry is this: you pop up out of nowhere, you hit them hard, and you get the heck out of Dodge before they can hit back.
Mm-hmm.
That's Ghost Troop is rapid kind of attack tactics with information and getting messages around. So that's what we try to do as a general principle. But our two strengths are really my two backgrounds. You know, what I get to do with Ghost Troop is I get to bring a very deep military background into leading them, where many of them don't have any military background whatsoever, but they have great information skills. My two backgrounds are military intelligence, which means processing information. When you say, how do I get information, that's what we'll talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But then what we do, on the other hand, is we put my second background, again, military trained, which is public affairs. I was trained to be a public affairs officer for the 75th Division in the Army, and I have a background with the Houston Chronicle, NBC, the Wall Street Journal. You know, I've been around. So that's our second strength, because once we figure something out, we don't just sit there. We know how to harness information, make it comprehensible, and distribute it. But when you say specifically, and you said, you know, you asked about Ghost Troop abilities, that's the whole summary of Ghost Troop.
Mm-hmm.
We try to figure it out first and get it out first. And then that's what we do.
And we are
able to quickly counteract what we see as media misrepresentations that go on every day, or in a bigger sense, when we see the Bush administration setting something up that we think is dangerous to the United States, then we get the alarm out pretty quickly.
Okay, so what's the purpose then of getting the information into the hands of the mainstream media, or is it the mainstream media that you try to contact directly?
Oh, no. The only time I contact the mainstream media is to implicate them. In fact, that's a good question. My background was mainstream media. After I came out of the Army, I went into, public affairs, my last military skill after intelligence, and I went into mainstream media and ghostwriting. Right now, Ken Lay is being sentenced coming up here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I can tell you Ken Lay stories. I worked for him. I wrote for him at one time. I've been in on meetings with the guy. The Houston upper-level management, the political people, the media people, the money people, were the people that I worked for when I was doing what was called ghostwriting. I interviewed to be Bush's speechwriter back in 96 when he was governor because his people liked me.
Mm-hmm.
So I know this market pretty well. And I'm sorry, I'm looking at one thing, I'm drifting from another. You were asking me what?
Well, specifically, the point of getting the information out into the public.
Okay, that background in Houston and Texas media being the case, the first thing I did when I got into my mission of conscience was started contacting Houston and Texas media, then expanding out to media contacts that I had in New York and D.C., and pretty soon when I found out after my first year in the info war, which was spent almost exclusively trying to get people to finally tell, the story of Baghdad, the story of what Bush did to the families of the soldiers of Baghdad and Fort Stewart, that story. After spending a year on that, I became convinced that the media was totally complicit at every level. It's part of a monopoly and a cartel, and none of them who want to do anything but what they're told keep their job. So we have a totally controlled media. The only reason it's worth contacting them is because if you contact other people at the same time, then the media knows that other people know that they know. The media would love to let Bush do anything he wants to do as long as he keeps the war going, because media is behind the war. They're very much pro-war. It couldn't have happened without media propaganda supporting this war and continuing this war. So the only time we write the media, as I say, is when we want to put their name on something and then maybe put dozens of other people who aren't the media in the copies or blind copies of it so that everybody knows, not only do we know this, but now we're making NBC Beaumont admit that they know it too. That plays heck on a cover-up.
Yep.
When the people who are trying to keep something cover-up know that they're now becoming the focus of the cover-up,
mm-hmm.
that messes with their mind.
Well, let's break right there. You mentioned Beaumont. I want to talk about Beaumont. I want to talk about Texas City, Chicago, and want to talk about Mission 666. All of that as we look ahead now, and we'll do that as we continue our interview with Captain Eric May, the commanding officer of Ghost Troop, tomorrow on PID Radio.
Well, you don't want to miss tomorrow because we're going to have part two of that interview coming up tomorrow in our PID radio broadcast.
Yes, and we will discuss some of the missions of the Ghost Troop, including some of the things that they're looking forward to, the dates that he is considering as possible watch dates for false flag events that may take place. So we'll keep an eye on things, especially 6-6 of 06. We'll look at 7-1 of 06 and possibly even as far ahead as 9-9 of 06.
Yeah, boy, I'll tell you what, there's so many. And these numbers, they you want to say, what do these matter? Well, they apparently matter to somebody.
Right. As Christians, we put no stock in dates, in the numerology behind them. But the fact is that you have to consider what the other side is looking at, and they do put stock in these numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Now we can drive ourselves, into loops, into terminal.
Go mad!
Yeah, terminal logic loops by trying to, read too much into the numbers. But the fact is that we do need to be aware of them, and that's part of what Captain May and the Ghost Troop does.
Well, you know what? We've got an exciting week ahead for you, not only part two with Captain Eric May, but on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of this week, Peter Goodgame is back.
Yeah, he's got some really interesting stuff to discuss, including some symbology from ancient Sumer that connects to end times prophecy. Did you know that the concept, the idea of the seven-headed dragon did not originate with John in the book of Revelation? Or with Daniel in his prophecy of the beast with many heads?
Peter Goodgame has eyes to see.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he is seeing. God is just opening up. We read that he tells both Daniel and John to seal up their visions.
Yep.
And it seems to me that things are unsealing as we get close to the end times. Also, next week, we've got David Lowe wrapping up prophecy series for us.
That's right.
And starting on June the 13th, we're going to begin our conspiracy series. Mm-hmm. We have a special contest for that that we'll tell you more about starting probably later this week. We're going to tease it along, but it has to do with tinfoil hats.
That's right. Meanwhile, we are happy to get your comments, questions, and suggestions anytime at our email address, which is radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
And you can always join us at the forum at peeringintodarkness.com/forum. We're running out of time, so we better get out of here. Happy Memorial Day, everybody. This is Sharon Gilbert.
I'm Derek Gilbert. Thank you for listening to PID Radio.
Bye-bye. Gonna step up to the microphone. Say it loud and clear. A better day.